This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, touchdown, Ian Book. And we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires it, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Jeffrey! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And we welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Tuesday, April the 28th of 2020. Sports Beat from home. We continue on with our social distancing on the program. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you from our homes. Our producer back at our WSBT studios is Jerry Janowski. Well, today, Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly had another Zoom conference, and the storyline this time talking about Notre Dame players taken in the 2020 NFL draft last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Today we're going to focus on Coach Kelly's comments in regards to the Bears taking tight end Cole Kmet in round number two, and also another second round pick, wide receiver Chase Claypool, to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we will bring you Brian Kelly audio in the opening two segments of our program. The My Five question of the day, also football related. Sean's going to rank the Notre Dame NFL draftees in order of their impact with their teams during their rookie season. At 6:07, 1 hour from right now, the Notre Dame football talk will continue. We welcome Brian Driscoll back to the program from Sports Illustrated. IrishBreakdown.com, his website. We'll get Brian's thoughts on the way the draft unfolded for Notre Dame players. We'll also have rapid fire later on in the program, which is brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, stay fun. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Rossini's Pizza, carry out you're proud to bring home, Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. It is a beautiful afternoon here in South Bend. If you're listening on the SportsBeat app outside the area, our temperature's in the 60s today. We've had some sunshine, so it has been awfully nice to step outside for a couple of moments, but we were inside during the 3 o'clock hour when Brian Kelly was on a Zoom conference talking to the Notre Dame football media, and we're going to get to that in just a second. But, Sean, I want to start real quick with a couple of news and notes. Trey Mancini, the former Notre Dame infielder playing with the Baltimore Orioles, you might recall that he had surgery back in March. There was a cancer diagnosis. More information today. In the words of Trey Mancini to the Players Tribune website, he wrote this story, and he told this in his story that he has stage 3 colon cancer. He started his chemo about a month after the surgery. The chemo began on April the 13th, and he says, chemo in the age of COVID-19 is crazy. He writes, I'm getting chemo at a hospital in Baltimore. I have to drive up there alone. Nobody is allowed to come in with me, and that's completely fine by me. I don't want anybody else being put at risk, people that are close to me and that I love and other people in the hospital. You just never know. COVID-19 has spread so quickly. I'm definitely trying to follow all the protocols, not only because it's the right thing to do, but also because I don't want to expose myself to anything, especially before going into chemotherapy. And Mancini also writes, my treatment will take 6 months, every 2 weeks for 6 months. If baseball returns in 2020, it will probably be without me. So some really scary information from Trey today. Stage 3 colon cancer. It just doesn't seem possible, Sean. And this is someone you were around with Notre Dame baseball when you were calling the games. I mean, such a young guy, you just don't think about stage 3 colon cancer with someone extremely healthy, professional athlete in their upper 20s.
Yeah, and it's you just don't, because he's like 27, 28 years old, and for this kind of thing to come up with something like him, who outwardly just looks so healthy. And it, just to look at the last couple of years of his career, he's obviously been very healthy and performed on the field. But a guy with a great attitude, and just reading those things, chemo in the era of COVID-19, just chemotherapy by itself and cancer by itself is bad enough, but then you throw all these extra protections that you have to take in this time of COVID-19, and in a big city like Baltimore as well. Any big city where there's big population is where we've seen the biggest kind of outbreaks of COVID-19. So you have to take every extra precaution. Yeah. And obviously we're all hoping that he's able to bounce back from this soon. And again, a guy who's always had a great attitude. And I think that is a big part of it. Any time that you're going through something like this is the attitude that you carry with it. And I'm sure it'll help carry him through.
Trey joined the Orioles in 2016 at the age of 24. 2017, his rookie season in the America League, was third in the Rookie of the Year balloting. 2019 with Baltimore, played in 154 games, hit .291 with a .364 on base. He had an .899 OPS, which is terrific, and ended up with 35 home runs, 97 RBI, and again, had the .364 on-base percentage. So on a very poor Orioles team, Mancini, one of the true highlights for Baltimore last year, and we wish him nothing but the best and can't wait to see him back on the diamond very soon. It's worth the time. If you have some time tonight, check out Trey's commentary and his story, and just Google the Players Tribune, and you will find the article put together by former Notre Dame infielder Trey Mancini. Let's get to Brian Kelly's Zoom conference today. He wanted to talk about his Notre Dame players taking in the NFL draft last week. And let's start with Cole Kmet, who we spent time talking about yesterday on the program, taken by the Chicago Bears, his hometown team, with the 11th pick of the second round. And Kmet joins a long list of tight ends with the Chicago Bears, but I think it's fair to say the main two guys, Jimmy Graham, who's more of that receiver on the outside, mm-hmm. and then you've got Cole Kmet, who lines up near the pits along the offensive line and an engaged tight end in the Chicago Bears offense. Then you got a whole bunch of other guys, including a second-round pick last year that hasn't worked out to this point. So it would seem like Komet's going to have a really good chance to get on the field in some capacity, despite having all these tight ends on the roster. And Brian Kelly today was asked about Kmet joining this long list of tight ends that the Chicago Bears currently have. And Coach Kelly, like us, pretty confident things are going to work out okay for Cole Kmet.
I was pretty confident that he was going to be, you know, one of the top tight ends. I think the thing with Cole is it's always a matter of, you know, do you want to do this right now? Because, you know, he had the option to come back for another year, and he probably could have been the number one tight end next year as well. So it really just becomes, a preference of do you want to stay in school another year, enjoy, you know, I think his brother being here, you know, was a factor, whether he could play baseball with him for another year, leveraging that, you know. So there were many factors that he had to consider. I don't think it was an easy decision. Once he made it, we supported him 100% because it was not a slam dunk decision one way or the other. But he made the right decision. His family was, obviously very important in guiding him, and it's worked out great. He doesn't have to go very far to put on his NFL uniform.
Well, we knew that Cole Kmet, had he decided to come back to Notre Dame and continue to be a member of the baseball team as well, a left-handed pitcher that throws in the 90s, he was more than likely going to be drafted by a Major League Baseball team. He chose football, and so since he decided football was his career, he absolutely made the right choice to enter the NFL draft. And I think back to quarterback DeShone Kizer. When he left Notre Dame with eligibility remaining, he went into a draft with a very weak quarterback class. Had he went back to Notre Dame and then got into the NFL draft, it was going to be more difficult on DeShone because there was a lot better quarterback class developing the year after. Now, who knows, Deshaun, if he comes back to Notre Dame, maybe he explodes and gets drafted in a better position, but he was still taken by the Cleveland Browns, which was the worst possible scenario. You talk about the quarterback killer organization. The Browns have done plenty of that through the years. So I bring up the Kizer story because I think Komet was in a similar spot. Now, I'm not exactly sure how deep the tight end class is going to be next year, but Komet, throughout the NFL, when you read about Komet in these websites, analysts talking about it, he was considered number one or number two on the board. It was not considered a great tight end group in 2020. That's why I thought it was a great business decision. If he wasn't overly concerned about playing baseball, if he was going to pass on the opportunity to play with his brother, which I'm sure was extremely hard, probably the hardest part of the decision, this was a terrific business decision and lines up with what Deshaun Kizer did a few years ago.
Yeah, I think it was a good business decision for him because he ends up being picked high in the second round. He had a shot at being a first-round guy, didn't quite make it. And in retrospect, when you look back at it now, he obviously didn't know what was going to happen with COVID-19 and everything that has happened since then. But, I mean, you look at the fact that had he stayed and played baseball with his brother one more semester, this spring semester at Notre Dame, that would have been gone. The Major League Baseball draft is in jeopardy now because that, to me, was kind of one of the big decisions. You mentioned being the left-hand pitcher with a mid-90s fastball. Would he have been drafted in a regular year? He probably would have in a regular year, but if Major League Baseball's draft is only going to end up being 5 to 10 rounds, does he even get drafted in baseball? So again, it's not like he knew any of this was going to happen, but as all these other events have played out, I think that it has turned out to be an even better decision that he made by declaring when he did and entering himself in this year's NFL draft.
Sean Steyer, Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat from home on WSBT Radio and live on the Sports Beat app. It is 5:18 on this Tuesday evening, going through some of the comments of head coach Brian Kelly today, talking about the members of his football team taken in the NFL draft last week. We're focusing on Cole Kmet in this segment, taken by the Chicago Bears in round number two. So how does Kmet fit in with the Chicago Bears? Here is the opinion of head coach Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the Chicago Bears is an operation that understands clearly their personnel, and they would not have drafted Cole Kmet if he was the 10th tight end. He clearly is an investment, a large financial investment. I think that's a $3 million signing bonus or in the neighborhood of a $3 million signing bonus. You don't make those kind of investments unless you know what you're getting. And what they're getting is an athletic tight end that is going to impact their offense immediately. He's smart. He's got the capabilities to get better and better as he continues to develop. So, you know, having a lot of tight ends on your roster is one thing. Having Cole Kmet, well, that's another.
So let's follow up that comment by playing Brian Kelly's comments today in regard to what we talked about last night. Now, I put in this question in the Zoom conference in regard to ESPN Radio NFL draft analyst Mike Tannenbaum criticizing the Bears taking Kmet, mainly because of the Bears have a lot of needs. They have all those tight ends. Why go down that road? But also, Tannenbaum, we thought a little unfair, or a lot unfair, in his comments that Kmet couldn't run and NFL defenses would not have to account for him in the passing game. So that was my question to Coach Kelly, and here's how Coach Kelly handled that question this afternoon.
I don't know. I guess Mike Tannenbaum knows more than all of the NFL teams that have evaluated him. I coached him, so I don't remember Mike being at any of our practices as he ran down the middle of the field. He's got plenty of speed. He'll be able to utilize it against safeties and nickel matchups. So speed will not be the issue with Cole Kmet. He'll be able to use that speed. I've had Travis Kelce, Tyler Eifert, Kyle Rudolph, Durham Smythe, I've had a number of tight ends that are doing exceedingly well and have been all pros in the NFL. Cole Kmet will be in line with all of those guys.
Okay, Mr. Stiers, you heard Coach Kelly respond to Tannenbaum's comments. What do you think?
I thought Brian Kelly was pretty tame with the way he responded, but I mean, he's right. We went through all this. Cole Kmet is not slow. We talked about the 40 time that he had. He ran a 4.7, which is not burner speed, but for a tight end, it's pretty good. And when you match it with the top safety in the draft who was selected, Xavier McKinney out of Alabama, he ran a 4.6. So we're talking about a tight end versus a safety. The tight end who has like 4 or 5 inches on the safety is only a tenth of a second slower in the 40. So I don't think Kmet's speed is an issue. The guy knows how to get open. And that is what, just purely as a receiver, really these last 2 years watching Cole Kmet has impressed me. The guy has a veteran feel about him for the way coverages are attacking him and how to get open. Now, late in the season, they took him away a little bit more, and he's going to have to adjust to that as he goes to the NFL. But he's not going to be quite the focal point when he gets to the Chicago Bears that he was with Notre Dame either. I mean, he was probably, after Chase Claypool, the number two option after he got back. But again, he had a big game against Georgia. So I don't think there's any reason to doubt what Cole Kmet brings to the NFL from an offensive standpoint.
Two things. Number one, I looked up Ryan Pace today, just trying to see if there's a connection between the Bears GM and Tannenbaum. Could there be hard feelings about something? Did they work with the Jets or the Dolphins at the same time? And Pace, from 2001 through 2014, a member of the New Orleans Saints front office, became the Bears GM in 2015. So I don't think there's been any crossover between the two, because it just felt like there were sour grapes about something. Just with the passion, Tannenbaum talked about how awful this pick was for the Chicago Bears, and was just overly critical of Kmet. I really feel like he hasn't studied Kmet, because his comments just don't add up. We are not in the Cole Kmet fan club, but by golly, those comments were absolutely ridiculous, saying he can't run and does not have to be accounted for in the passing game. That's just absolutely unrealistic and disappointing coming from someone that has been in front offices with the Jets and the Dolphins. And I think sometimes this is more ESPN than other national outlets, but it just feels like they have to have this rogue guy or gal, depending on the sport, that is willing to say anything to get attention. Let's look at ESPN TV. Rex Ryan, one of the most outspoken coaches in NFL history, not afraid to say anything, what's on his mind, has been very critical of a couple of players, which got him into a little bit of trouble recently, but he has survived it because I think ESPN likes the bad guy to come in and say the radical things to stir the pot. And I feel like Tannenbaum was a little bit of the stir of the pot on the radio side for the draft coverage, because if there's no hard feelings between the two, and maybe there is and I haven't found that, it just doesn't make sense with the intensity of his comments in regard to how bad the pick was. And again, unfairly was analyzing Kmet in a way that does not add up for those of us that watched him day in and day out with this football team.
Yeah, and I mean, day in and day out gives us, obviously, a lot more body of work to base our opinions on, and you're right, maybe he just hadn't studied Cole Kmet that much, which would be odd considering you're the guy on the air for the draft for 3 days, and you're the former general manager, and I mean, this is a guy who is probably going to go in the second round. It's one thing for him to say, look, I don't like this because the Bears should have addressed this need or this need, which some other guys did, which he did to an extent as well. But I agree with what you're saying. I find it very odd where he attacks his speed, his athlete, you know, the skill set that he has, because I think that that's where he was most off the mark. But you're right. I mean, ESPN does encourage a lot of these guys to be bold with their opinions, and look at what it gets them. We're sitting here 4 or 5 days later, and we're talking about this guy and his opinion that he had. I mean, you know, so they get some carry out of it. I don't think that they're necessarily disappointed when they get that kind of carry, even if it's kind of from a negative perspective.
Well, again, he's the GM that was involved in the drafting of the guy that was a part of the infamous butt fumble. Enough
yeah,
said,
that's right.
Maybe
that's
right there. He took Mark Sanchez at number 5 in the draft, the USC quarterback. Brian Kelly, Zoom conference today, talking about Notre Dame draftees. We're focusing on Cole Kmet in this segment. Here's another soundbite. This is BK being asked about the ceiling for Cole Kmet at the next level.
Yeah, I've said this to a number of GMs and coaches that I talked to in the evaluation process with Cole. I thought that there was a lot of growth there still for him. And, you know, I think you could look at just this. Clearly, his athletic ability shows itself, right? His physicality. You look at the Georgia game coming off an injury, ran through, a very good defense in Georgia. But, you know, route running, I think, you know, he'll get a chance to work on that on a day-to-day basis. Remember, this is a full-time job now. You know, he doesn't have to worry about academics. He'll be much better at route running. Inline blocking, the technique associated with combination blocks, working with the offensive line, all those areas he's going to be able to really elevate his technical game. He's a smart football player. He's an athletic football player. So I think the technical things, you'll see great improvement.
Well, I think it will be important for Kmet to improve his inline blocking. He's not a guy that's going to be used outside with a wide receiver look. He's going to be attached to the offensive line. So I think he is going to be as good as his online blocking continues to develop. And I think it's important to remember, now that he is football only, baseball is no longer a part of his thinking. 100% of his focus will be on football. And now every little detail, every little technique is going to be very important to him. He'll be able to focus on that and now has a chance to become more of a complete football player, the one we think that he could become at the National Football League level. So baseball out of the picture probably will make a difference. And Cole Kmet was a great player in college. Don't get me wrong. It didn't hold him back in college. But the next step in the NFL, the inline blocking is going to have to get better. And once he takes care of that, he's going to be on the field a lot for this Bears football team. He's not going to replace Jimmy Graham, but they can be used in the same formation with Cole attached and Graham on the outside as the pass catcher.
Well, and he's going to have a position coach, too, that is 100% dedicated to the tight ends, whereas he had an offensive coordinator who was the tight ends coach at Notre Dame with Chip Long. And when you're the offensive coordinator, I think regardless, probably maybe with the exception of quarterback, it's harder to devote that kind of attention to the to minor, you know, minute details with pass routes and stuff like that, I would have to imagine.
Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Some of the comments of Brian Kelly on Cole Kmet. We'll play some more of BK's thoughts on Kmet as the week goes on. But we need to take a break. When we come back, we need to accomplish two things, because something has popped up within the last hour that I just noticed that will possibly change the way baseball could be played this year. In fact, Sean Steyers and Darren Pritchett's teams could be in the same division in 2020. Huh. How about that?
Interesting.
I'll give you all the details on that. There's going to be possibly, this is what's being discussed. This is in a story from Bob Nightingale from USA Today. There's no America League, no National League, but there would be three divisions of 10 teams geographically put together to cut down on travel. I'm not sure how many games will be played, but I'll give you all the details where the Cubs are, where the White Sox are, the Tigers, everything coming up in a couple of moments. Plus, we want to get to Brian Kelly discussing Chase Claypool going in the second round to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's on the way as Sports Beat rolls on. He's Sean, I'm Darren. Sports Beat from home on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. It is 5:35, Sports Beat from home. Sean and Darren with you. Jerry producing back in our WSBT studios. Hope you had a wonderful Tuesday. Thanks for joining us here on WSBT Radio. And we want to let you know this Friday's Restaurant of the Week is Smith's Downtown in Mishawaka. And you can purchase two $25 certificates for only $25. Smith's Downtown is located at 110 Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka. Dine locally and enjoy Smith's Downtown daily specials and Smith's famous shaved prime rib sandwich and so much more. So this Friday morning, go to restaurantoftheweek.com and get your half-price Smith's Downtown certificates before they are gone. Okay, couple of things we need to get to in this segment. We'll get to Brian Kelly talking about Chase Claypool going to the Steelers in just a moment. But I want to turn our attention to a story that came out on the USA Today website, written by USA Today baseball insider Bob Nightingale. Now, Nightingale has written a story that this is something that is being talked about by Major League Baseball, and he got this information from three executives with knowledge of this particular idea. They all requested anonymity because the plan is still under consideration. So here's what it boils down to. And again, this is Bob Nightingale from USA Today reporting this. Major League Baseball officials are optimistic this week that the Major League Baseball season could start anywhere from in late June and no later than July 2nd. Also, the thought is the teams would play approximately 100 regular season games. But here comes the twist. There would be no American League and there would be no National League. There are 30 teams in Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball is considering a three-division, 10-team plan in which the teams play only within their division. So again, three divisions of 10 teams, and those 10 teams in each division would only play themselves. So if you think about it this way, if they're going to play 100 games, you can play each team around 11 times. That gets you to 99 games. So here's the twist. Here is the possible realignment, which is set up to cut down on travel. This is all for geographical purposes. So the three divisions in Major League Baseball would be possibly this. In the East, you would have the Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Nationals, the Orioles, the Phillies, the Pirates, the Blue Jays, the Rays, and the Marlins. Woo! Yankees, Mets, Red Sox, Nationals, Phillies, Blue Jays, Rays. Six of the 10 are playoff contenders under the normal Major League Baseball alignment, I would say.
Yeah.
Woo! Okay, so here's the West. The L.A. Dodgers, the L.A. Angels, the San Francisco Giants, the Oakland A's, the San Diego Padres, the Arizona Diamondbacks, Colorado Rockies, Texas Rangers, Houston Astros, and Seattle Mariners. So the Dodgers and the A's and the Astros would be, I would say, the elite teams there, with the Padres and Diamondbacks on the edge of that conversation. You could have some poor teams in that particular division. The Giants are rebuilding. The Rockies pitching doesn't look very good. The Rangers going into a new ballpark, not sure if they're ready to compete. And the Mariners are probably a year away. So looking at the divisions, I would say this is probably the weakest of the three. And good luck playing the Dodgers.
Yeah, no kidding.
And now, last but not least, under this possible realignment, if Major League Baseball could come back in late June, early July, under this possible realignment, here are the 10 teams in the Central Division. The Chicago Cubs, the Chicago White Sox, the Milwaukee Brewers, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Kansas City Royals, the Cincinnati Reds, the Cleveland Indians, the Minnesota Twins, the Atlanta Braves, and the Detroit Tigers. So looking at the regular baseball divisional lineup, teams that you would say have a realistic chance of making the postseason in that division: Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Cardinals, Reds, Indians, Twins, Braves. That's 8 of the 10. Sorry, I don't mean to put your Royals in another category, but the Royals and the Tigers are in a different spot right now. that would be unbelievable competition in that division. Bring it on. Let's go.
Man, absolutely. Woo! What a tough division that would be.
Mm. But how much fun. All the teams close by. You're just playing each other. This, I like. I like this a lot. And I think as each proposal comes out, I like it a little better. I'm not sure you can top this when you play just in, within your division, around 100 games. I don't know how many playoff teams are going to be. I'll worry about that at another time. But if this is doable and if this lines up with the scientists and how we're going to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic and what's possible. And I should mention, these games are in major league parks. These are not games in Arizona, Florida, Texas. These are in major league parks. So what do you like? What don't you like?
Well, I mean, I don't mind the concept of what they're talking about, but it just seems like we're still a ways away from being able to be in a situation where players can go home on a nightly basis and live in these areas of population density and be able to, you know, securely think that they can go to and from work and just interacting and everything. The old pod system that has been discussed, I realize that it's not real popular with the players because of the potential for separation from the families and all that kind of stuff. But we're essentially talking about,
well,
people are living at home and going about their business and then going to the ballpark every day. Even without fans, I mean, you're talking about a couple hundred people at the ballpark every day. So in terms of sort of restricting and limiting exposure potentially to people who are infected, all it's going to take is one person to get infected, right? And then we're shutting the whole thing down again.
Let me read this from the article. The plan, pending approval of medical experts and providing that COVID-19 testing is available to the public, would eliminate the need for players to be in isolation and allow them to still play at their home ballparks while severely reducing travel.
Hmm.
So that's the thinking at this time. Well,
yeah.
This is obviously being kicked around seriously because Nightingale says three major league executives have all said this is something that is being talked about. So it's obviously, it would seem, one of the plans that Major League Baseball is taking serious at this time to implement if all of the other things fall into place from a medical standpoint.
Yeah,
I'm just excited for baseball. I miss baseball, but we have to do this.
Well, I do too.
I know. But I'm really excited about any hope that baseball can take place. And if you can play in the major league parks, this would be, I think, a great opportunity to try something different. You got three divisions of 10 teams. Again, I'm not sure how the playoffs work. Probably no fans in the stands, I would assume, or depending on where we are at the time everything starts, can you have people in the park separated by 6-7 seats? I'm not even going to get into that. That's for scientists to decide. I just think the idea of changing up the divisions is exciting. And, you know, I've felt like we should have done this years ago, changing the divisions, put these more geographically isolated. And, again, Cub fans would rather play the White Sox and the Cardinals and the Brewers more than playing the Pirates and the Reds in the division. There just isn't that draw of playing that team 19 times, but playing the White Sox 19 times, the Cardinals 19 times, the Brewers 19 times. That puts more excitement into the regular season, and baseball needs more excitement in the regular season. So this sort of plays off my thinking for the last couple of years. So that's why I think I'm a little extra excited about the possibility. Good job, baseball. Let's see if this can work. I like it. Let's go.
I hope so. Fingers crossed. Drive forward. I mean, these are monster divisions. You're essentially talking about going from six divisions down to three. Granted, it's for this season only, to see how it goes. But, I mean, we all want baseball to come back. It'd be a lot of fun if it can happen.
Well, I would like to trade the Braves for the Marlins or the Pirates if possible, just to kind of level off the playing field, because that Central would be a beast with 8 of the 10 teams serious playoff contenders. Okay. More to come on that, but I had to bring that information to everybody that are big baseball fans. That's from Bob Nightingale, USA Today. He released that information over the last hour or so. And again, three executives confirmed this story. So it is something that is being talked about seriously. It is 5:45. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, we'll return to Brian Kelly meeting the media today, and he focused on Notre Dame players drafted last week. We'll focus on Chase Claypool, the Irish receiver. Now we can call him a Steelers wide receiver coming up next as Sports Beat rolls on from 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Sean and Darren, Sports Beat from home on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. We're going to skip the My 5 question of the day today, bring it back tomorrow. The Major League Baseball storyline popping up. We added that to the show on the fly, so that pushed back our Chase Claypool conversation. So let's take care of that right now. Again, Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly held a Zoom conference with the media today. Let's focus on Chase Claypool in this segment. The Steelers selected Claypool with the 17th pick of the second round. And here is Brian Kelly discussing the evolution of Claypool with his football team.
Well, I think first and foremost, it's just, when you come to any program, it's kind of finding your position. And, Chase got moved around a lot because we had players in front of him, whether it was early in his career and you had Equanimee St. Brown or you had, Torrey Hunter. He was always behind a really good player, whether it was to the wide field or to the boundary, and he had Miles Boykin, So I think once he found himself in a position where he could get consistent reps, it was just a matter of how he practiced. And I think when the change really occurred for Chase in terms of his play is that he became a great practice player. I think all the really, really good players show themselves in practice. And I think it's when he came to practice every day and started to practice in a manner that would prepare him to be a great player is when we really saw a difference in him, And that then carried over in the classroom and carried on in the community and how he handled himself. And so maturity and all those things started to kick in as well. And that's just the maturation process that you see in every program.
I remember Coach Kelly talking about Claypool needs to be a better practice player. And once he got that down, his evolution as a wide receiver took huge jumps 2 years ago, became a really solid wide receiver for this football team, playing alongside Miles Boykin. And when he needed to be more of an impact guy this year, he did not disappoint.
Yeah, I mean, every player who signs and ends up at Notre Dame is going to have talent with them, and it's about more than talent when you get to the highest levels of whether it's Division I football, NFL, wherever it happens to be. It's more than just about talent. You have to be able to go out and show you can do it consistently on a daily basis, and that's what practice is for. And I mean, we've heard about this with other Brian Kelly not just Brian Kelly players, but other players as well. They've got to do it consistently. There's that famous Allen Iverson thing, but we're talking about the NBA. Yeah. That's a different level. To get to that level, you've got to show you can do it day in and day out, and it starts on the practice field.
Mm-hmm. Here's Brian Kelly discussing how Claypool fits in with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, his size obviously stands out. So, you like to match him out on the perimeter because of his size, his ability to, run the line on the outside where you put the ball up one-on-one, let him use his size to an advantage. But we've had him inside. We played him in the slot a little bit as well. He's extremely versatile. He can come down and block anybody, safeties, Rovers, corners, obviously. He can mismatch on them. He's got great versatility. I mean, obviously, his last year he played in the short field for us. He was our W receiver. In college football is a little bit different with the hash marks. He worked in the short field, which gave us one-on-one matchups, which he could, usually win those with regularity. But he's a guy that can play, a flank on either side of the formation. But again, has the physical tools to play anywhere at the wide receiver position.
Well, again, I think Claypool's going to be a monster down in the red zone. That large catching radius, physical, strong hands, wins battles against defensive backs. As we talked about a couple of weeks ago, will he become a number one wide receiver? You know, I'm not sure, but he's going to be a really good Robin to Batman at the worst case scenario, and I love him down in the red zone area. I think he can be a really good mismatch advantage for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
No, absolutely. You get a guy like that, it's like throwing to you, all this talk about whether or not he would move to tight end, especially when you're down there in the red zone and like the 5 and 10 yard line and in, and you're throwing to the end zone. It's like having a tight end, a guy with a tight end body, but much more athleticism and really good hands that you can go to. He's a huge mismatch problem for opposing defenses down there.
Juju Schuster, Chase Claypool, some new targets for Ben Roethlisberger as he comes back from elbow surgery. We'll take a timeout. More Sports Beat coming up. Brian Driscoll from Sports Illustrated will join the program in 10 minutes on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win, Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a Southland Cup Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with the De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And this is our number two for Sports Beat. On this April the 28th, brought to you by Budweiser, Rossini's Pizza, and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Sports Beat from home. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Thank you for joining us. We have focused a lot on the NFL draft, Notre Dame players being taken last week. Brian Kelly had some thoughts on Cole Kmet, Chase Claypool, and others today. And we'll get to more of that audio over the next couple of days. But let's continue this storyline. Brian Driscoll from Sports Illustrated has covered Notre Dame football for a good amount of time. You can read his work at irishbreakdown.com. Former player, former coach, offers that perspective when he joins us every Tuesday at this time to talk some Notre Dame football and other subjects. Hey, Brian, it's Darren. Good to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Darren. How are you?
I'm good. I still have a little bit of a headache from Friday. Listening on our airwaves, the ESPN radio coverage of the draft, and Mike Tannenbaum, the former executive of the Jets and Dolphins, very critical of the Bears taking Kmet, and I understand they had other needs. You can make an argument they should have taken a safety, although offensive line didn't make sense, the value wasn't there. So let's push that aside. I get that stuff. But he says Cole Kmet is not fast, and teams will not have to account for him in the passing game at the National Football League level. Why is he wrong?
Well, I think Kirby Smart and his defensive staff would have a bit of an issue with that when you consider their entire second-half game plan was on trying to stop Cole Kmet because he shredded them in the first half. I mean, I don't know if maybe perhaps he's looking at his size. I mean, I don't want to get into his head or speak for Mr. Tannenbaum. He was kind to me when they had me on their radio show before, so I don't want to be too critical, but I just don't know how anyone could have watched his film and come to that conclusion when you consider not just the fact that he does run well for a guy his size, but the fact about you have to take into consideration the wingspan and the ball skills and the strength. Because a 6'6 guy with as long arms like Cole Kmet has, and the hand and the ball skills he has, he doesn't need the same level of separation that Eric Ebron does, 6'3 and 230 pounds, right? And I feel like it's a poor argument that doesn't hold up on film. But even if it doesn't hold up on film, when you're talking about 6'6, 260 pounds with that wingspan, that's a matchup nightmare. I don't care how open a guy is or isn't.
Well, what about the other side of it? Because the other knock, not necessarily from Tannenbaum, but just from some fans and even some media members that I've seen, is, look, the Bears needed to address the offensive line, and they didn't do that in this draft. And, I mean, you can look at the way some other teams drafted, getting really quality players over necessarily just going after, maybe reaching and addressing a need. What do you think about it from that aspect?
I think that's a very fair criticism from, if we're just talking broadly speaking, you know, would an offensive lineman have helped them there more than maybe Cole Kmet might have? Sure, but as I had a discussion with someone who brought that up, Darren, in a Twitter response to you and I, you have to then get specific with, well, which one are you actually going to take? Because Robert Hunt just came off the board. In my view, there wasn't another second-round graded offensive lineman. The next guy that went was Ezra Cleveland, who I think went 15 or 20 spots later.
Yep,
I graded him as a third-round player. So if you're going to take an offensive lineman there to fill a need, then you have to then understand that you're taking a player that doesn't grade out nearly as well as Cole Kmet. So now you have nine tight ends because none of them are that good, which is why you have nine tight ends, right? Because if they had good tight ends, they wouldn't have nine of them. And now you've now used a premium number 43 overall pick, your top pick in the draft, to fill a need, and the value isn't there. So they had plenty of other picks where they could have addressed the offensive line, and they did. There are also going to be guys that are going to get cut for financial reasons that you can then go on the market. And there's all types of things where you can still fill that hole. At that spot, you still have a position of need at tight end. You need to give your quarterbacks a weapon to throw to that also helps Allen Robinson take some of that pressure off, and you have to get a guy whose value fits there, and the reality is none of those offensive linemen graded out anywhere close to that range.
Before I get to my next question, since we're talking about the Bears and how Kmet can help the quarterbacks, saw a stat today on ESPN. Guess who the two quarterbacks are that had the worst drop-off in their quarterback ratings from 2018 to 2019? Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky, and they're both on the Chicago Bears.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, the reality is this is still a quarterback-driven league,
sure.
And the Chicago Bears made a huge reach a couple years ago when they took Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, that's just the reality. You had Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson on the board, and they overthought it. They went with a guy that lacked the experience and, in my opinion, lacked the ability to be the number two overall pick. They fell in love with him, and they made their choice, and now they're living with it. But, again, I don't think the way you rebuild your roster is to continue to reach and make the similar mistakes. Say, okay, they made that mistake. There wasn't a quarterback they were taking right there. Their offensive line isn't where it needs to be. You don't reach and take an offensive lineman. So I really like what Ryan Pace did there, which is, this is maybe it's not a position of quote-unquote need, but is the best player in the draft at that position. He's better than what we have on the roster right now. So does it make your roster better? Yes. Does reaching for a third-round offensive lineman early in round two make your roster better? Not necessarily. So I actually like what he did here.
Okay. Let me ask you about Chase Claypool going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. In terms of what he could become in the National Football League, Brian, in your opinion. And I had this discussion with Sean, and this is the best way I could describe our thoughts to you. Does he have a chance to be Batman, or is he going to be a really, really good Robin? Is he going to ever become that number one wide receiver, or do you think he's going to be that supplemental guy that can still do a lot of damage, in particular down in the red zone?
I think that's a great question, and I think it requires two answers. And the one is, right now, with where his game is, he's a Robin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got the elite physical tools, he's got the great size, he's got the wingspan, the catch radius, the hands, and all those traits, right? The speed, vertical speed, but his game is still too raw for him to be the guy. Right, he still has a lot of work that he needs to do on getting off the line of scrimmage, using his release and his route stem to manipulate cornerbacks and give himself leverage advantages, improving his top ends and allow him to gain the separation that someone with his size and speed should be getting that he did not get at Notre Dame. So from that standpoint, he's not a Batman. Now, as a receivers coach, do I think he has the ability to eventually become that kind of player? Yes, he does. But not all players can develop that. And so we don't know if Chase is going to be able to develop that. But for what he is right now, he can be a really good Robin. I'd say if you could add, like, you know, you think of the old TV Batman and Robin, add about 4 more inches, you know, a little bit more size to that little skinny Robin that they had then, yeah, this could be a really good Robin, right? You know, so in that regard, I think it is a very strong pick. And I also think he has a skill set that even as that Robin player, because he is a big physical vertical player, it's going to take a lot more pressure off Juju Smith-Schuster, who's more of an intermediate work-the-zones kind of player. So I think it's a really good complement to what they already have, but he does have that upside of maybe someday with good coaching and work ethic, and I think we all agree that Chase has the work ethic, he could eventually be that guy.
So when you look at these six guys drafted, Brian, are there any of them who, when we're sitting here in 5 years, you think has a chance to be Pro Bowl caliber?
Yeah, I think the first four taken can be that. I would say especially the first three, just from a God-given ability standpoint, with his size that we talked about, if he does develop his game, if we're talking about how effective of a route runner he is at any point in time of his career, he's going to be a 90-catch, 1,300-yard receiver. I mean, that's the kind of physical package he has. He is a faster, more explosive version of Mike Evans. I mean, that's just fact, right? But he doesn't have the nuance of playing receiver that Mike Evans has, or a Brandon Marshall. That's another good comparison, if you remember him back with the Denver Broncos. I think Julian Aguara, from an explosiveness standpoint, is a first-round talent. He just has to get the maturity, and again, he has to nuance his game as well. And, you know, Cole Kmet fits right in with what we're seeing from the top tight ends in the NFL right now. There was a time the NFL was going to kind of that hybrid look, the Eric Ebron, the Evan Engram player from the Giants, but now the NFL is realizing it's the George Kittles, it's the TJ Hockenson. Those are the players that are really shining because of the value they add, the run game and the pass game. And so I think that's there. But I think when you look at Troy Pride Jr., the reason I don't include him as being locked in is because there are certain traits that I'm concerned about with Troy Pride, mainly playing the football, that he could be a really good pro, but being on that Pro Bowl level is going to require him to develop a skill that I can't necessarily teach as a coach. And so that's why I don't think he's there. But from an opportunity standpoint, he might have been in the best place of all the players, because the roster at cornerback in Carolina, I believe he immediately steps into a situation where he's the second best cornerback on that roster.
Yeah, good luck in that division too, playing the wide receivers in the NFC South with Thomas, Jones, Evans, and that's just the high-end guys. The secondary group is awfully good as well. Sports Illustrated's Brian Driscoll, our guest on WSBT Radio. I think sometimes, Brian, steal of the draft is overused, so I don't want to use that with Khalid Kareem. I'm a little surprised he went in the fifth round. I was thinking more fourth round. I guess there's not really that much difference, but I'm more interested in fit. How does he fit in with the Cincinnati Bengals, and how do you perceive his NFL career?
You know, it depends on, you know, he's an interesting player because somebody said it correct. I read, and I can't remember who wrote it, but they said that he doesn't, might have been Pro Football Focus, he doesn't do anything great. And that's true. And so I don't see him as being a guy that will eventually grow into like a Pro Bowl player like we discussed. I don't think he's that guy. What I do think he can be is that complementary piece that great defenses have. And he'll never be Von Miller, and he'll never be Bradley Chubb, but could he be a Derek Wolfe kind of player as a Broncos fan? Yeah, I think he can be a key part of that. You know, that guy that doesn't get all the hype and the love, but is a really important part to a defense being great. And the other thing about him, too, is he's always been a really clutch player. You think fourth quarter against Michigan, the strip sack against Virginia Tech, the fourth quarter against Pitt, Navy this year when Navy went on two early drives and he forced his fumble. And that's the kind of guy that defensive corners are going to love. Plus, he brings some versatility. The Bengals are a four-down team out of their base defense, but they'll do some stuff where they want one of their ends to kind of stand up and do different things. And I think Khalid could do that. So I think he's got a chance to be a long-time NFL player. I don't know if he's a guy that's ever going to develop into like a star. Wow, that guy had 15 sacks. How did that Pro Bowl player go to the fifth round? I don't think he can be that kind of guy. Whereas I think the four guys in front of him do have the skill set to be that. And that's the difference right there. It's that skill set, that athletic skill set that he lacks.
Which of the six undrafted free agent signees do you think has the best chance to stick on a roster for a while?
I think Jalen Elliott. You know, there's an interesting story there. So I did some digging on that afterwards. And so what I was told is the Lions actually reached out to Jalen before the draft and said, listen, we love you. You're a draftable guy, but we're not drafting a safety in this draft class. And they didn't. And they said, if you don't get drafted, we want you. So that was he was a guy that they clearly valued. It's just that in this draft class with the picks they had other priorities. So when you have that kind of relationship with a player and you have that kind of, you've done that kind of research, this is a guy that you view as a fifth, sixth, seventh round player. Which means that guy's going to get a little bit more of a look than the typical undrafted player. Because what people have to understand is these guys are usually meant to be bodies in camp. You know, a lot of times the reason people will sign a quarterback as an undrafted free agent is because they need five quarterbacks. They call them quarterback arms. You know, we can't have our top two guys throwing every pass that we have in camp, so we need the extra bodies. They don't actually intend those guys to, you know, make the team and become starters. Some guys will stick because of special teams, which is why Osmar Bilal, the Chargers, is someone that I would have my eye on because Osmar could be a really good special teams guy. Same thing with Jahmyr Jones because he provides two things NFL teams want, versatility and the ability to be a special teams player, and, of course, he can rush the quarterback a little bit. So he's another one. But I think Jalen Elliott's the guy that's going to be given every opportunity with the Lions to stick and make that team.
Okay, my final question, Brian, I'm going to leave the Notre Dame conversation for a second. We saw the first round unfold. It was an offensive tackle, quarterback draft early on. Then the wide receivers started, and you had the Raiders taking Ruggs out of Alabama. They went with that speed threat. And due to some circumstances, all of a sudden some teams, I think, were in a position to draft players they were not expecting. And you take a look at Denver and Dallas. Denver was looking at a couple of wide receivers. They had Jerry Jeudy, number one on their board. That's who they end up taking. I would just like to know from your standpoint, if you were John Elway, would you have taken Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma? And I think he made the right choice, by the way.
Agree. I graded CeeDee Lamb as the best receiver in this draft, but I would have taken Jerry Jeudy because it's a lot. It's not always about getting the best player. It's about getting the right fit for what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing for me. And they need a guy. They've got Cortland Sutton, who's 6'4", 215, big physical guy. They got a 6'5", 250-pound tight end. They needed a guy that could be a great route runner, could do a lot of different things, could move around in the offense. And to me, that's more of what Jerry Jeudy is as opposed to what CeeDee Lamb is. And so I thought the Broncos made the right choice. And props to the Cowboys for taking a player at a position. This is what we were talking about earlier with Cole Kmet. Right. Receiver's not a huge need for the Cowboys. But you've got a top-10 caliber player that falls to you there. There were people that were projecting them to take Trayvon Diggs with the 17th pick. Now imagine if they would have tried to fill the need for a borderline first-round player as opposed to taking the best player. Then they would have got Trayvon Diggs, who's not as good as CeeDee Lamb, and then who knows what they would have done in round two. But because they kept to the philosophy of you cannot pass on a player that is graded that high that falls that far to you. And then what happened? Because they did that, next thing you know, Trayvon Diggs falls and take him in round two. So I thought the Cowboys were masterful in how they handled their first three rounds. That's how you're supposed to handle the draft. And that's why I tell Bears fans, don't look at need all the time. That's got to be – need has to fit in with the talent as well. And if you're going to err on the side of one or the other, you take talent. And that's what the Cowboys did, and it worked out great for them.
I agree. And I've been reading stuff, and Mike McCarthy, what he was preaching to their personnel guys and to everyone is players over system. I mean, ultimately, you need players. You need the best players to have a chance to win. I love it, and I think when you look across the board, and I think that's something that the Bears did this year that ended up working out for them rather than reaching. I think their draft ended up being okay as well when it all shook out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they got two borderline first-round players in the second round. I mean, I think if Jalen Johnson doesn't have shoulder surgery in the offseason, he's probably a first-round pick, in my opinion. So I think that they did really well there. They got two high talent players in the second round, and when you can do that, you've done well for yourself. Because that's what makes or breaks your draft, right? Like, yeah, it's nice to get the fifth or sixth round steal and all that kind of stuff, but really the teams that are hitting home runs, they are getting star players in the first two, three rounds of the draft, and I think the Bears are able to add that kind of impact. And I think the Cowboys did the same thing because they didn't obsess over need so much that they lost track of, is this guy better than everything we have on our roster? And the answer is, yeah. And the only guy that can compete with Cole Kmet from that standpoint is Jimmy Graham, who's 12 years older than he is. Right. So I think that they did well. I think that the Broncos did well. I think the Cowboys did really well. And that's, you've got to stay true to your board to a degree, but when talent falls to you, you have to take it.
Brian, you write at irishbreakdown.com. What can Irish fans expect when they go to your website right now?
Well, I did an article this morning where I broke down how Notre Dame compares to the rest of the country when it comes to producing draft picks. And one of the fascinating things that I learned is Notre Dame produced more in the last five draft classes. They've produced more players in the first four rounds than all but 17 teams in all of college football have produced in their total seven-round drafts. So they've really upped that, and I break that down. I show how they would rank in each conference. For example, they'd be tied for first in the Pac-12. They've produced more than anybody in the Big Ten, where they rank in the SEC. They've produced one fewer player than Georgia, but more high round picks than Georgia. So I break that down. And then here in about an hour, I'm going to have an article breaking down the Notre Dame offensive linemen and how they stack up in the 2021 offense or NFL draft. So Liam Eikenberg, Robert Hainsey, and Tommy Kramer, and where I would project them based on where they are right now to next year's draft. Because when you return all five starters on the offensive line at a place like Notre Dame, you should be really good. And I think a lot of those guys are going to have a chance to hear their name called in day one and day two of next year's draft.
Well, I see on social media today, USC isn't buying that Notre Dame has had 511 draft picks in their program history, because they have come out with a graphic that says they have 511 picks in the NFL draft.
Well, the reality is when you have done such a poor job producing NFL players like USC has in the last 5 years, you've got to find something to hang your hat on, right? The reality is in the last 5 years, USC has produced 19 total drafted players. Notre Dame has produced its 19 players in rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4, right? So when you start doing that and Notre Dame's producing more first-round picks, you've got to find something to feel good about, because winning on the field is not what USC can hang their hat on right now. Producing high-level NFL draft picks is not something USC can produce right now. And the last time they had a top pick, the number 3 overall pick in the NFL draft, that team lost to Notre Dame by 35 in the regular season. So they got to have something to feel good about, right?
Drop the mic, Brian. Just drop the mic. We're good with that answer. Fantastic. Hey, great to catch up with you, Brian. Thank you so much for your analysis. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great stuff there. Brian Driscoll, Sports Illustrated. His website, irishbreakdown.com. When we come back, rapid fire is on the way. 627 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app.
Rapid fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
All right, Darren. Well, we had some news break this afternoon on USA Today about Major League Baseball. So this is a fill in the blank on this one. MLB considering a drastic divisional realignment for this season that would have teams playing games in their home parks in a total of three divisions arranged geographically. There would be no fans in the stands for the games in these home parks. And this proposal is blank.
Best that I've heard. And I think something new for baseball with the realignment brings a little extra excitement on top of just getting baseball back in general. And I like the fact that you're not going to be traveling from coast to coast. You're going to play just within your division. So all things considered, and this probably means the DH will be universal, and I'll have to deal with that. That's going to happen at some point anyway. It is the best idea I've heard so far, and I hope, honestly, that that is the way they decide to go. I think the changing of divisions brings extra excitement to the return of baseball.
And with one of the last proposals that we had talked about when they were talking about just the Florida-Arizona, they were talking about a divisional realignment for this season, and I'm sure something would have been the same if they had added the Texas pod. If and I'm sure that's probably still a consideration as well. what I've been trying to find out, and I have not been able to, just in the short amount of time, it's been less than an hour since we talked about this. They're playing baseball in South Korea, and I know that they're playing without fans in the stands over there. Are they playing in home parks that you know of? Have you followed it closely enough to know if they're doing that or if they're doing these kind of biodome pods like they were talking about here with, you know, if it would have been Texas, Florida, Arizona, that kind of thing?
All I can say is just looking at some of the video that has been distributed on social media, it looks like the real ballparks. If they are something created, they've done a great job of disguising.
Yeah. I think if they can make this happen, it's great. Testing and keeping the players safe and infection-free is the biggest part of this whole thing. And, I mean, look where we sit here right now. We're still sitting in our homes doing this show, and we have a fraction of the people who go to work in our building, or at least our part of the building every day, compared to what it would be like even without fans and all the staff that you'd have at baseball games to be doing that. So I'm all for it if they can make it happen. And as we've talked about before, I'm all for the creativity that they can kind of pour into this season, because if there aren't going to be fans in the stands, we're going to be watching on TV and listening on the radio. So I hope it can work. And it sounds like the people in all different sports are a lot more optimistic that things could start to move here fairly soon. We're all still kind of in that wait and see, but fingers crossed. As I've said from the beginning, I like the fact that they're considering all these different options and being open to different possibilities in all of this.
Well, if you look at the new alignment being proposed, you can almost draw a circle with the Central Division. You've got Minneapolis, Kansas City, you go down to Atlanta, then you work your way back up to Cincinnati and Cleveland. You've got Detroit and Milwaukee. So there is a bit of a circle. I guess the longest trip might be the Twins taking on the Braves. Other than that, the travel's not very bad for the teams in the Central Division.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about the Braves. They're kind of the outlier in that Central Division. We should probably go through that maybe for people who weren't with us in the first hour. The Central Division, you have both Chicago teams, the Cubs and the White Sox, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Royals, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Minnesota, Atlanta, and Detroit. So, I mean, that's, as we talked about, that's a pretty tough division, just first of all. But yeah, but then really Atlanta is kind of the only outlier that you have there that would kind of be a little bit farther away from the rest of those teams. Then when you look at the West, you've got both L.A. teams, the Dodgers and the Angels, the Giants and the A's, so they're both right there in the Bay Area. You've got the Padres, Arizona Diamondbacks, Colorado Rockies, Texas Rangers, Houston, and Seattle. So you've got all those teams on the coast, and then you kind of float over a little bit. Colorado and the Texas teams would be in there. So it's not like there's not going to be any travel in there. For just a handful of teams, you're really close to each other, but they're as geographically close to each other as you're going to get if you're going to lump that amount of teams together. And then in the East, you've got the Yankees and Mets, the Red Sox, Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Toronto, Tampa Bay, and Miami. And I would almost rather flip-flop like Pittsburgh and Atlanta, because you've got the Florida teams, and Atlanta's a lot closer. Put Atlanta in the East and then put Pittsburgh in the Central, because they seem like they would geographically make more sense, because they're not very far from three of the cities right off the bat: Cincinnati, Cleveland, and who was the other? Cincinnati and Cleveland are basically what I was thinking of. So two of the cities right off the bat. But in any case, it's an intriguing proposal, and let's keep our fingers crossed, because they're hoping that maybe this happens in June or as early or as late as July. So fingers crossed, and we shall see. Let's go back to some football, Darren. Of the Notre Dame players who were available in this year's draft, is there one who you think would have been a really good fit for your team?
Oh, boy. Am I considering who we drafted? Because there's a little crossover in position players.
Let's say clean slate. Let's say it was nobody is drafted. You're going into the draft and
okay.
would have been a really good fit if you know, nothing would
okay.
have happened over,
okay.
over the,
well,
you know, that last weekend.
I'll just set up as a Bronco fan. I would take Jerry Jeudy over Chase Claypool in this argument. The tight end position for our need at the tight end, we took Albert O, the tight end from Missouri, who's more of a pass catcher, detached tight end compared to Cole Kmet. So even though I love Kmet in terms of fit and need, I think that direction was okay. I would say from a backup edge rusher standpoint, Okwara would have been a nice guy to have behind Chubb and Von Miller. I've always appreciated his ability to drop back in coverage, which you're asked to do in Vic Fangio's scheme. So I think Julian Okwara would have been a very nice guy to have added to the roster, put in the rotation as a number two edge rusher, or in Denver's case, an outside linebacker.
Yeah, for me, I think it's Julian Okwara as well, if I'm looking at the Dallas Cowboys, because going into the draft, edge rusher was one of the needs that they were looking at, because they have a couple guys on one side who had a substance suspensions that they're serving that haven't been overturned. They've got Tank Lawrence on the other side, so they've got some possibilities there, but they still have questions as to what's going to happen at the start of the season. Are they going to have to kind of go with a makeshift defense if it doesn't pan out? So mine would definitely be Julian Okwara, probably Khalid Kareem right behind him, just because the Cowboys, even what they ended up doing, as much talent as they ended up getting, they ended up addressing cornerback, wide receiver really well, and they've got a defensive tackle, so maybe that frees up a body that can move outside and play some in for a few games. But defensive end is still it for me. There definitely could have at least been some more depth, and I think Julian Okwara is going to turn into a really good pro there at defensive end. So he would have been it for me. Some speed, athleticism coming off the edge, and then, as you said, the versatility to also drop into coverage whenever he needs to. Okay, who has the better chance to be with his current team in 2 years? Mitch Trubisky with the Bears or Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay?
Well, Trubisky's fifth-year option is due Monday. The Bears have to make a decision, so he's just not going to be with the Bears after this year. You're not going to pick up $24.8 million on him.
Nope.
So that's
so Aaron Rodgers is your answer. I think that's the biggest thing, because I heard Tony Kornheiser saying the other day that he thinks the Packers should trade Aaron Rodgers, but I don't think it's a possibility, it sounds like, because of his contract. When it goes to the money, I guess there's a monstrous cap hit even if you were able to trade him this year. It's like 20 plus million bucks, and you're right. I think the writing's on the wall for Mitch Trubisky. I don't see him back next year. So as strange as the whole situation has turned out in Green Bay, I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be there for at least another couple of years until there is some kind of opt-out clause in that contract, and he ends up moving along one way or the other. So I think Aaron Rodgers is there for a couple of years, and it'll be a really interesting situation, and I'm sure Bears fans are going to love to watch it if it turns really tense with his head coach, Mr. LaFleur. Okay, last question for tonight. In Sunday's Last Dance, we talked about this in the My Five yesterday, Dennis Rodman was given a 48-hour vacation by Bulls head coach Phil Jackson. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what are the chances a coach today would ever do something like that during the season with a player?
Baseball, no. College sports, no. NFL, no. NHL, no. NBA, anything's possible with the load management. I mean, the NBA had to make rules.
I suppose that's true.
About load management, where teams were working around the system too much. So now, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the NBA. Other sports, no chance.
I suppose that's a good point, because you could make that excuse today in the NBA that, hey, it's load management, so he doesn't have to be around for a while. But It's amazing to me that this happened in the middle of a season, and really, like, there were always stories about Dennis Rodman and how wild he was, and he was always in the news back then. But the fact that you could just give a guy a couple days off, and it really was not that talked about. And I mean, this is a good, 10 or 12 years before social media, and even before the internet had taken off to, I mean, obviously there was internet and we were using websites, but not the way we do now with, you know, it took like a day and a half to download a video if you're going to watch something back then on the internet. So it's just amazing to me. And I mean, look what happened just a few years ago, that thing when Tony Romo and Jessica Simpson went to Mexico. Do you remember that? I mean, how big that became. And that was during a bye week. He wasn't even missing practice or a game. And here's Dennis Rodman taking basically, it was supposed to be 48 hours, but it ended up being 3+ days off and just going on a rampage in Vegas. I suppose you're right. From a load management standpoint, maybe somebody could pull it off in the NBA. But you definitely couldn't keep it under the radar by any means if you were going to do that.
Well, Carmen Electra had interesting taste at that time.
Yes.
Holy
yes,
cow.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Unreal. Unreal. Okay, Sean and Darren with you. Sports Beat from home on this Tuesday. That completes Rapid Fire. More Sports Beat coming up. 644 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Sports Beat from home. He's Sean. I'm Darren. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday evening. We have focused quite a bit today on the NFL draft, Notre Dame players being taken. Brian Kelly, the head coach of the Fighting Irish, held a Zoom conference earlier today and talked about several of the players being taken. And we've documented this over the last couple of days. Let me play the soundbite one more time. We've talked about, from Friday's ESPN radio draft coverage, former NFL executive Mike Tannenbaum, critical of the Bears taking a tight end when they selected Cole Kmet out of Notre Dame. The part that was striking, he said that Cole Kmet could not run and would not be a guy that teams would account for in the passing game at the pro level. Sean and I, of course, disagree with that. You, as an Irish fan, you're not going to say that that's true. I mean, come on, that's unrealistic. Even if you are someone that doesn't like Notre Dame, if you heard that, you'd be like, come on, what in the world was he watching? So as part of the Zoom conference today, the media able to ask questions to Brian Kelly about the draft, and I asked Coach Kelly to comment on Tannenbaum saying that Cole could not run and would not be someone that teams would account for in the passing game at the NFL level, and here was Coach Kelly's answer to that question.
I don't know. I guess Mike Tannenbaum knows more than all of the NFL teams that have evaluated him. I coached him, so I don't remember Mike being at any of our practices as he ran down the middle of the field. He's got plenty of speed. He'll be able to utilize it against safeties and nickel matchups. So speed will not be the issue with Cole Kmet. He'll be able to use that speed. I've had Travis Kelce, Tyler Eifert, Kyle Rudolph, Durham Smythe. I've had a number of tight ends that are doing exceedingly well and have been all pros in the NFL. Cole Kmet will be in line with all of those guys.
Well, it's unfair to put Travis Kelce and Cole Kmet in the same conversation evaluating talents because they're different type of tight ends. Plus, Travis Kelce is a Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champion, and on track for a Hall of Fame career. Cole Kmet is just starting out, but they're two different players. And Kmet, to me, I'm not sure he'll ever become as good a pass catcher as Eifert or Rudolph, but I think he can be a better inline blocker than both. That's not to say he's not going to be a valuable player, and that's not to say he can't catch the football, but Rudolph and Eifert, that got them to the league. Their ability to catch the football, run good routes, possibly Kmet can get to that level, but as we see him right now, his trajectory, I think he can be, in time with more work, a well above average inline blocker, and I think there's the capability of him being a very useful, if not a little more than that, pass-catching tight end in the National Football League. I just don't know how he fits in with the Bears. Since they have Graham, will he be used much in the passing game? That, we're going to have to see how it develops. During the 16-game schedule, I'm going to be optimistic that there will be 16 games.
Well, and I think that the pairing with Jimmy Graham is going to be short-term anyway. I think they were looking at that as a stopgap, and the fact that they drafted Cole Kmet where they did, high in the second round, means that they see a pretty bright future for him. And I think that he's going to be more than just a blocking tight end. Is he going to be a Jimmy Graham or a Gronk or a Travis Kelce? No, I don't think so. But I think that like you were using Kyle Rudolph, I think that the production that Kyle Rudolph has had over the course of his career is a fair goal.
Okay.
For Cole Kmet, that eventually, you know, not necessarily this year, but over the next few years, I think he can turn into that kind of production potentially.
He'll be making a ton of money at the end of the rookie contract if that turns out to be the case. We'll take our final break, 6:55 at 96.1 WSBT, live on the SportsBeat app. One-day fundraising effort by Midwest Family of South Bend and our WSBT radio group is this Friday to assist the incredible needs during the time of uncertainty we're in right now for the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Visit feedindiana.org and make a donation. Also, the next time you go to Martin Supermarkets, pick up an extra few items and place them in the donation bin by the exit. Visit WSBTradio.com for more information. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Rossini's Pizza. For Sean and Jerry, I'm Darren. 7 o'clock, WSBT South Bend.